You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the S E A. You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the S E A.
Hello and welcome to episode 421 of the Fabulous Pelton Cast, sponsored by our friends at Pagliacci Pizza. I'm your co-host Kevin Pelton,
and I'm Tristan Carcino,
and we're coming to you in different locations. I'm in Seattle, Washington, home of the AL West leading by 10 games.
There we go. The double-digit AL West leading Seattle Mariners.
What a time to be alive.
And I'm coming to you from my Washington home of the Seahawks.
they didn't even get a Super Bowl 48.
Yeah, they won the Super Bowl 48 a long time ago. What have you done for me lately?
You know, it is also the home of the two-time MLS Cup champion Sounders. They've won much more recently than the Seahawks have won.
Redness?
Yeah, we've gone over this. Their new headquarters at Long Acres is technically in Renton.
Oh, but see, I reject that. No. Long Acres is in Renton?
Yes. We've gone over this so many times. You know what? Someone did put together a map. Noah put together a map, right?
Yes.
In the Discord. And we'll have to put the home of the Sounders on there.
Wow. So, okay. How long do you think it would take to drive? Oh, actually, this is not that far. That's not Long Acres. Okay, never mind.
Where do you think that Long Acres is?
I thought it was at the site of Emerald Downs. That makes more sense to me.
What? You thought the Sounders were practicing out there?
I don't know. Because I was going to say, these are both Renton, but how long do you think it would take? Let's do this exercise anyway. Google Maps right now. I assume there's no traffic. Driving from Long Acres, home of the Sounders, to the Seahawks practice facility.
Okay. Let's see here. 10 minutes.
That's your guess?
No, that's what Google Maps says. 10 minutes. Are you disputing Google Maps?
No, I'm not disputing Google Maps. I wanted you to guess first. That's actually shorter than I thought it would be.
It is shorter than I thought it would be, too. But it's only like three. What is the Seahawks? Exit 6? Because you used to be exit 4, right? Or are you currently
Seahawks
exit 4?
Exit 5.
This is not on the map. Which exit number is Seahawks headquarters? But, they're both very close to the freeways, as it turns out. So when there is no traffic on 405, which is only at 9:30 at night, then they are not too far apart. But it feels much more like Tukwila, to the original point.
It is Tukwila.
But it's not. Because maps are real. And geography exists. Well,
maps are real and geography exists. Sort of a motto of the Pelton Cast, kind of.
No, I don't think it is, actually. Quite the opposite. Well, speaking
maps are not real and geography doesn't exist.
Speaking of geography, is just based on how close things feel to Boulevard Park and how far south Toronto is.
Is Starfire in Renton, though?
Starfire is in Tukwila.
I mean, we're talking like literally.
Yes, those are less than 5 minutes apart, Starfire.
They're less than 5 minutes. It's like, it's a 1 mile between there. But like, I think as the crow flies, it's like me to Katie's house, Long Acres to...
It's a little bit farther than that, let me tell you.
Starfire.
It is a little bit farther than Katie's house from you.
Can you do Google Maps as the crow flies?
No, I don't believe you can.
That's bullshit.
Actually, we need to develop the app. The Pelton Cast Geography app. It just tells you whether something is north or south of Toronto.
Let me throw this out there. So I had a friend who hated the Charlie XCX album.
It just tells you whether something is north of Seattle Center or not.
And she left me you could do voice notes. You don't know this because you don't have an iPhone. But out for no iPhone. But it's ruining all the group chats. Anyway,
happy to do it. Excited to do it. Yeah.
Oh, God. You're the worst kind of person. But So you can leave voice notes with an iPhone. You just record it and then it sends them.
By the way, let me just go out on a limb here. I feel like the Pelton cast demographic is very Android heavy. I know our vibe.
You're probably right about that. In the Discord, when somebody was asking about how many children people had, they should have been like iPhone or Android and do a poll in there.
That'll be the next one.
By the way, join the Discord if you haven't right now. There's much better conversations happening in there than are happening right here.
I'm learning all the time.
But, wow, ESPN senior writer Kevin Pelton admits to learning something.
I hope that's part of my brand.
Is it?
Learning things?
From other people?
Yes.
I don't think that's part of your brand. I'm so afraid. But
what?
You start at the condescension and that's where you end.
You're
condescending solely to me.
Well, that is true. Yes. I'm way more condescending to you than anyone else in the world.
Okay. But so she was very upset about the Charlie XCX album. Left like a three-part message. Like I was like, what are your issues? And instead of typing them off, she left a voice note. It was like three parts, all of the complaints about the Charlie XCX album or whatever. I don't need to get into the details or whether I agree with them or not. This is not me. This is somebody else. But I just enjoyed listening to hot takes in that form where it's just like a stream of conscious hot takes happening. And I was like, this should be a social media platform, basically like a radio call-in that you could just like jump into whenever and hear hot takes about a specific thing from people who call in and just leave it there.
Your concern is that the internet right now is not facilitating enough hot takes. That's you. That's your issue. You think the internet's shortcoming.
You can't tell me that the radio call-in shows, like there was a magic to radio call-in shows and people calling into them, that is different than reading something on the internet.
Did you see the Sam Presti letter to the editor when he was in high school to the Boston Globe that resurfaced recently?
What was that?
Where he advocated for the Celtics to draft Jason Kidd.
That's really funny.
And
that the editor of the Boston Globe had the power to make this decision?
Well, no, I don't think you're like ready. Do you understand how letters the editor? I feel like an old man here. Like I'm not that much older than you. You don't understand how letters the editor work? They just publish it in the paper. It's not like it goes to the editor specifically. It's just a colloquialism for it.
Yes.
But it made me disappointed that there was no archive of my phone calls to KJR.
That's
in the
what
late 1990s.
That would have been fun. You're saying you want to canonize the ESPN Kevin Pelton, ESPN senior writer Kevin Pelton. What would you describe it as? Like the
origin story.
The origin story. The what are they called? The days. The Halcyon days. Something like that.
I don't know. Those were the Halcyon days. I specifically recall one call to presumably Groz with Gas. I don't know if there were or maybe it was one of them individually, but I recall it as the combined segment advocating for the Sonics to trade for either Eddie Johnson or Dale Ellis at the 97 trade deadline. And then they eventually did get Dale Ellis in the 97 offseason, and he had a terrific 97-98 campaign. So that one aged very well, I would say. And Eddie Johnson then went to Houston and was part of that team that knocked the Sonics off in the 97 playoffs. So
there you go.
Yeah.
I feel like so.
But I have no way of proving to people.
A lot of people like listening to podcasts, right? I assume. No, podcasts are good, but they're long form. You can't just jump into them, right? That's like a commitment. If you could just be like constantly playing on a sort of like Instagram stories or whatever, there's just people dialed in giving their hot takes about whatever. And you like go into the Charlie XCX channel and you hear somebody being like, this song is this. And then you're like ranting about it for a second. And then you tap onto the new one. And you're like, I'm telling you, this is not the worst idea ever.
The amusing thing is the closest to this I've ever heard is when the listener Jimmer was a guest on the True Hoop podcast back in the day. And the joke was that he would be called up and just be ranting at any given time. I forget what it was, but it was like no context. Just go right into it. No context. And then keep going until the end. It was like Jimmer was constantly saying this all day long, and we had just tapped into it for a short period of time.
Do you know the SNL digital short, The Monologue, I think it's called?
It's not ringing a bell off the top of my head.
Fred Armisen is just like, oh my God. Fred Armisen's just talking, like somebody asks him one question, and then he goes on the super long monologue, and then people are like coming and going, and he's still there talking. That's what I'm saying. You just
It
like
does
jump
harken
in.
back to the soapbox tradition, I suppose.
Yeah. Yeah. What I'm trying to say is we have to get back to the soapbox.
I'm sticking with social media not facilitating enough hot takes.
SNL digital short Fred Armisen monologue. What was that called?
Did it really exist, or did you just imagine it?
No, it did. It was great. Anyway,
I had this moment lately with my microwave.
it's in Renton.
The other day it started displaying the
Moment with your
time.
microwave.
The other day it started displaying the time, and I was like, wait, has that always been on there? And I'm pretty sure it hadn't always been on there. So, but I couldn't say for sure if I was Mandela affecting myself or Berenstain Bears affecting myself. But anyways, speaking of Starfire
There we go.
and of the Sounders Long Acre Complex and the Sounders in the Rain, congrats to our Valley View Elementary classmate, Maya Mendoza Ekstrom, who was named Chief Business Officer for the Rain after the Sounders' purchase of the team, backed by equity firm Carlyle Group, finally closed at long last on Monday. Mendoza Ekstrom previously served as COO for the Sounders, leaving them to join the Rain as part of this combined organization and run business their business operation. So
There we go.
very cool for a dragon in a position of power.
Huge.
All right, congrats to Storm Forward Victoria Vivians, who was named assistant coach and director of scouting for her alma mater, Mississippi State. So she'll be keeping busy during the WNBA offseason. And lastly, this week, we're remembering longtime Seattle Times columnist Blaine Newnham, who passed away at age 82. Newnham joined the Seattle Times in 1982, wrote for them through his retirement and sports columnist in 2005, and then continued to write a weekly column until 2007. So, certainly, somebody who was a fixture of the Seattle Times. We were Times subscribers. Both of our grandparents had the PI, so we got our occasional dose of the PI back before the internet existed. But we were Times subscribers, so it was Steve Kelly and Blaine Newnham were the majority of the sports opinion that we were getting before we started listening to sports radio. All right, no search for Seattle's best cookie this week. Some of us competed hard enough to get cookies over the
Wow.
weekend, and some of us didn't. So we're going to save that review for later down the road. Did have one food note. Lil Woody's has previously announced this. They're opening in Green Lake, but I didn't know until they sent out the email about this week's Lil Woody's Burger of the Week that they are also, as part of that space, opening a second outpost of Darkolino's Cafe.
Really?
So they're celebrating that this week with a Darkolino's Burger of the Week using their ragu. Which I picked up earlier this evening. It's the officially the Green Lake Burger is what they're calling it, with the Tortellini's Ragu, provolone, pepperoncini, diced onion. So that was quite tasty. I still haven't
Sounds
made it out
crazy.
to Tortellini's. Have you been there?
Nope, I have not.
It's on my list for sure. All right, with that, we are directly into your
Wow.
favorite segment.
Don't burn yourself. We got Mariners hot takes coming at you.
Been thinking a lot about gatekeeping lately. With the Mariners now double digits up in the AL West. After a sweep of the defending MLB champions, we're now in unprecedented territory for most Mariners fans. And the urge might be there as you start looking around and seeing some new faces to get straight up on your high horse and remind people that the Sonics should have traded for Dale Ellis in 1991 or something like that.
I think we've already revisited a lot of our former Mariners takes from the 1990s, particularly how distraught we were over the Jose Cruz Jr. trade because we were certain he was going to be a superstar.
And you might
Was
want to
it Cruz
talk
Jr.,
about
the Jared Kelnick of his day?
how you've been there the whole time. And you appreciate the subtleties of winning more than your fellow fans. But I'm here to say, fuck that shit. Cheering for a winning team is fun, and there's no right way to do it. We are now in a unique position to reach out to our fellow greater Seattleites and Washingtonians and not Oregonians and bring them into this club, which is playing very fun baseball right now. If the Mariners make the playoffs, or God forbid, went to a World Series, most of us don't get anything tangible out of it at all. Financially, it probably costs us money in terms of gear and expensive playoff tickets, which you know we're all going to buy because we did it the last time. But what we do get are memories and, the best part, the general feeling around town that having a winning sports team can bring. The little conversations at school pickup, the nods of approval when you're wearing Mariners gear, the literal energy in the air. That's the shit that's fun. And you can't gatekeep it because it takes all of us focusing on and thinking about this winning team to make it magical. And look, I get it. You were there for Sam Haggerty's hit or Luis Urias's tenure or going back to Luis Torrens and Mike Ford or all of Felix Hernandez's entire career or some player named Vladimir. And you know, that's awesome for you. Because you can also appreciate this 10-game division lead just like the rest of us. But do you think I was paying attention? Fuck no. We literally went on a podcast and talked about how we weren't Mariners fans.
but I did very clearly say I was going to jump on the bandwagon when they got good again.
There it is. And now I told you last week that I'm mad if I miss a game and that they are my number one team in Seattle that I care about. Alongside Husky football.
It's truly shocking.
From a practical standpoint, bandwagon jumping is good. If teams are public trusts, then they should benefit when the team is good on the field for ownership and the front office to realize that net profits are generally higher with a winning team. There are many ways to be a fan, but the only thing that is worth gatekeeping is to gatekeep that the bandwagon jumpers are the most responsible fans, and we can all enjoy it now because, like Macklemore said, it's all the same wins.
You've raised some compelling points, but what if Jan gets interested in the Mariners?
That would be asking a lot of questions. In the Mariners.
Is she?
Yeah. She's like, oh, Josh Rojas, he said he loves his hair too much. And I was like, wait, ignore what you're saying. First off, you know what Mariners promotional night it is, but you know who Josh Rojas is? I'm like, we're just gonna let that go, Jan. You're just gonna casually name drop Josh Rojas in conversation. That was great.
I mean, UW football obviously went through this last fall.
The tickets aren't even more expensive, I don't think.
Yeah, maybe because the coach left and the
generally all of it. The coach, all the players, the conference, the athletic director, the chancellor of the school.
Yeah, eventually the president. Yeah. the be here through this season, Dr. Kausak.
The stadium is still there. They're still purple and gold.
Yes. Still not the Weasel logo. But still maybe claiming the Sun Dodger logo when one of the recruits posted that on social media. Yeah, it was so much fun because it's like having people to talk with having other people care about the things you care about is good.
I agree. It takes years though. We're in this point. We're out of the hot take moment. And we've talked about this a lot, like Seahawks fandom. For us, in the late 90s, it was not normal. And I mean, maybe a little bit like Ricky Waters for early Mike Holmgren era. There was some energy. When we were kids, it felt like nobody cared about the Seahawks, right?
Correct.
And I think, obviously, people did. There were fans of the Seahawks, but it wasn't just like a casual fan. The number one teams in Seattle in the mid-90s were the Sonics were number one. Husky football. Maybe those two together. Husky football had fallen off a little bit by that point.
It was Husky football first half of the 90s, I think. Probably
the
even above.
Seattle Sonic. Title belt, right? If the Seattle championship belt, like who has it? And I think right now in this moment, the Seattle Mariners have it. But We could keep an eye on it. We can monitor the situation.
I mean,
I think the Huskies had it in the fall.
It's tough to say because they have literally not played a game since January. That's how the schedule works.
When you're in the moment, you parse it more. And like when you're looking back to the 90s, you're looking at multiple years. Right now, we're looking at seasons a little bit more. But like early 90s, Husky football, mid 90s, Sonics, late 90s, probably Mariners. I think the Mariners probably had it. Like,
I mean, look, the origins of the current Mariners fan base date to 1995. We were there on opening day.
Probably true, but
we were there on opening day 1995. I mean, granted, coming off the strike and the late start of the season, but I think there was like a crowd of, I'm going to put the over under at like 27,000 for opening night in 95.
Yeah.
Which is the second time we've referenced that specific game on the podcast this year, I think.
But then the Mariners had it like, so the Sonics threw the championship, fell off a little bit. Not the championship, the NBA Finals.
But then I think the Mariners had already overtaken them by fall.
By the NBA Finals?
I don't know. It's tough to say. But like, baseball just resonated with the city of Seattle to me in a way that the NBA couldn't. Or maybe not even the city of Seattle. The suburbs of Seattle.
It really doesn't check out to me why people might have resonated more with Dan Wilson. But anyway,
I mean, not that people didn't love Gary Payton and John Kemp. Gary Payton and John Kemp are extraordinarily popular sports heroes.
Something we're going to really figure this out if we really think hard about it. Jay Buhner, Randy Johnson, Dan Wilson, just fans. Just
I mean,
really
Ken Griffey
like
Jr. is a large part of it. He's the most popular player in the Mariners.
But the Mariners held it through at least 2002.
Okay, right? I was way off on that. There were a solid 34,656 there on opening night 1995.
Through 2002, Mariners had the belt in the city of Seattle. And then the Seahawks claimed the belt. And I think that the Seahawks had it, realistically speaking, for like a full decade.
Probably, yeah. I mean, at least.
Even when things were down, the Seahawks were still the most important franchise in Seattle.
And I mean, when the Seahawks were most down, was literally the worst year in Seattle sports history.
Yeah, there was nobody else to claim it. I don't think the
one
Sounders
of the teams moved. I mean, the Sounders, yes, like relatively became most popular, but yeah, they never in absolute terms.
There's no way that the Sounders just literally, they won a bunch of MLS Cups, but there was never a moment that you could feel it, you know? Like that you could walk around and it's like, whoa, everybody is thinking about the Sounders, even when they were winning. Because it just, ultimately, MLS just doesn't matter that much. Like, they can never have as big of a fan base as some of those other sports. I think that the Mariners had it until, I feel like the second that the Seahawks had it, until the second Cal Raleigh hit that home run. And I think Cal Raleigh hit that home run, sending the Mariners to the playoffs, and I think the Mariners have kind of had it since then. Husky football has lingered, but... And the Seahawks are always, like, the Seahawks fan base.
I think Husky football did take it last fall.
But I'm saying when we're talking much larger scale, because I don't want to just think about it, like, you could be like, well, the Seahawks playoff run with Gene. Like, on a bigger scale, I think the Seahawks held the belt in Seattle from, like, 2003 until the moment Cal Raleigh hit that homer.
Here's a question.
Cal Raleigh hit the homer.
Would you care to guess which is the most attended season in Seattle Mariners history?
Attended,
yeah, the highest attendance for a season in Seattle Mariners history.
I'm gonna guess 2002.
That is correct.
I nailed it.
Yeah, off the high of 2001.
Well, because they sold all the tickets, like you sell the season tickets off of the 116 win season.
2003 is third. It's obviously 2001 is second. Now, I'm surprised 96 isn't higher. 97 was actually the highest in the 90s.
That kind of makes sense to me.
Those are the only four 3 million attendance seasons in Mariners history.
They had to have like a prove it year in there.
I suppose so. I think it was also just the fact that they were like in the pennant race in 97 and 96. They kind of fell out of it.
Yeah. But I think that the Mariners have it right now. So.
I did not expect we were going to be discussing the Seattle championship belt, but here we are. The 10-game lead, largest AL West lead at any point since the end of the 2001 regular season, largest division lead in baseball, dominated the Rangers in the 3-game sweep. continue the momentum, beating the Guardians on Tuesday night. This is a crucial series because suddenly, with the AL West feeling like more likely than not, let's say, the biggest question becomes, can the Mariners catch Cleveland and get that second bye, as we talked about last
There's
week, is their
just,
goal?
I feel like we shouldn't think about it in necessarily those specific terms of catching Cleveland and getting the bye, because it's fucking June right now. But being the number two seed.
Okay, yes. Getting the bye, fine. If it's not Cleveland specifically, like they're ahead of Kansas City, so
Well,
they get
there's Kansas
catch.
City, there's Minnesota, but it all like all of those teams are a couple of games apart, and there are like almost 100 games left.
But I think Cleveland has, I guess Minnesota might have good projections. Kansas City does not. Yeah, I guess Cleveland and Minnesota are almost identical in terms of their
Getting the number
Fangraphs
two
projection.
seed is the most important bit.
But these games are still important from that standpoint. The Mariners are now projected 36% of the time to get the bye, but they are the second most likely after the Yankees to get a bye.
Do you know where the Mariners are overall, just record in all of baseball?
I don't know where.
Would you like to guess?
Seventh?
Sixth in baseball. Do you know who they're right behind?
The Dodgers?
The Los Angeles Dodgers, who signed Shohei Ohtani over the offseason.
Well, I've heard of them. I'm familiar with their work.
The team with Mookie Betts and Shohei Ohtani is right like it. I think they're a half game up on the Mariners.
They are up to a solid here, 10th in run differential. Still trailing Kansas City in that one. Well, but you can't win them all. You can win them all by a run, though. Ty France returned from the injured list Tuesday. Mariners, in the corresponding move, designated backup catcher Sebi Zavala for assignment. He had started just one game since May 26th, with Mitch Garver resuming catcher duties of late. And it means keeping Tyler Locklear on the roster after his two home runs in the week he spent filling in for France on the injured list.
This has kind of been the surprising thing for me with the Mariners, which is beginning of the season felt very similar to last year, which was there were players who came in like the big offseason moves. Most of them didn't pan out particularly well. Some ended up getting better throughout the year, some didn't, right? The thing that has been most amazing about this season to me is obviously nobody's playing that amazing, but like they call up Tyler Locklear and Tyler Locklear's playing well. Right? Like across the board, they're getting these bits from players that are like you don't expect. And top to bottom, it's kind of a complete roster. Like there's still no one player who's the standout superstar,
Please don't say you
but
see no holes.
they're really, I mean, like there's always places to improve. They have Dylan Moore hitting ninth right now.
Dylan Moore has seven home runs this season.
Like Dylan Moore is an exceptionally good ninth hitter. For a team like this, they just kind of have a lot of good players. And a year ago, they felt like they didn't have enough good players. And those people like Tyler Locklear at 23, he stole a base. There was a first baseman who stole a base for the Mariners. Having him and Ty France platooning, even if they are, I was looking at it thinking about Tyler Locklear's maybe a better hitting first baseman at the very obviously a better defensive first baseman than Ty France, but that he's a better hitting first baseman than Ty France, and he's not right now. But
I mean, Ty France has been perhaps the Mariners' best hitter over the course of the season.
is that true?
He's pretty high up there in WRC plus, as far as I recall.
But they kind of have a lot of guys, and it's a little incredible that they can make these moves and have just get something from so many different players. Ryan Bliss, they're
Are they
getting.
getting that much from Ryan Bliss?
They're getting more than you would expect. There's a couple of homers. He's getting on base. He's got speed. Like,
I believe there's Homer.
I'm
There are
pretty sure he has two.
homers.
He has two.
Does he?
Yeah. Even,
Okay.
I mean, like, Tyler Locklear, I think, has played in eight games and has homers. Like,
No, that's been legitimately quite remarkable.
oh, I guess Ryan Bliss only has one.
I was pretty sure I looked at that the other day.
But he's like positive war for Ryan Bliss. That's not exactly what you're expecting. I mean,
Yeah,
if you
among
were to.
Mariners regulars, I believe this is
And
not
Mitch
updated
Garver is
from
hitting now,
today.
too.
Ty
You know,
France
like,
and Josh Rojas were tied for number one in WRC plus.
yeah, sounds great.
So there you go.
But it really is kind of just across the board. Like, they are finding hitting from a lot of different places. And you don't, and Dylan Moore was somebody who I'd kind of written off. I was never a Dylan Moore guy. And all of a sudden I'm like, oh, Dylan Moore's at the plate. Something can happen here.
Well, of course not. Dylan Moore was competing with Sam Haggerty effectively.
But even just like irrelevant of that, Dylan Moore's tied for third on the team in homers.
That's what a time to be alive. I said it earlier.
I think he might. As far as regulars, people who've played more than 10 games, Dylan Moore is fourth in OPS on the team. And the Tyler Locklear 757 OPS, I don't know. Like, they're just getting things from a lot of different places. And offensively speaking as well, I mean, you don't want to scapegoat Brandt Brown, but like, things have gotten a lot better after that firing. And there were a couple of series where it was like, okay, you know, they're playing very bad teams, but then sweeping the Rangers. The Rangers haven't been amazing. They still won the World Series last year.
Haven't been amazing. It's pretty generous for the
Still,
2024 Texas Rangers.
it's not something that you, it's, they're not the White Sox. You don't take it for granted in that
I
way.
agree with that.
And then the runs that they scored against Cleveland today, you know, the Bryce Miller in the second, I think, had the bases loaded with nobody out. And I was like, the game's over. The second that the bases were loaded, I was like, the Mariners will never, they're going to score four runs. The Mariners will never score. And then the Mariners just kept scoring runs. They kept hitting dingers. It is very unlike this Mariners team and where we started the season. And you could probably find a point, you know, 3 weeks into the season and look at the record since then, and they're probably the second best team in the base in baseball, third best team in baseball.
I mean, besides Brant Brown, like, look, the weather has gotten much warmer. The fading of the marine layer helps things. You know, there was some regression to the mean inevitably, but the data does not suggest that Brant Brown was not the problem.
I mean,
Can I ask you an important question that occurred to me while I was listening to actually almost the entirety of today's game? Do
okay.
you think that Stephen Kwan is good?
I
Given
always like
your
Stephen
takes
Kwan.
about a certain Mariners legendary outfielder and his fondness for and similarity to said Mariners outfielder, granting he probably walks a little bit more.
This is Stephen Kwan, who's batting almost 400 right now.
Yes. Well,
Do I
I'm
think that
just
Stephen Kwan is
asking.
good? Let's see how many times in his career Ichiro had a 1,000 OPS. We're just going to do some math here.
He did not ever have
No,
a
no
1,000
times?
OPS.
Oh, okay.
His slugging percentage is considerably worse than Stephen Kwan's. It is
How many
true.
times did Ichiro have a 900 OPS? Oh,
No.
still zero? Okay. Get the fuck out of here with your comparison of Stephen Kwan and Ichiro.
I
It's
mean, Stephen Kwan
offensive
has
to
to do
Stephen
it for
Kwan. That's
several more
Beaver
months.
legend. That is PAC2 legend, Stephen Kwan, to you. Thank you.
The evolutionary Ichiro.
I mean, if Ichiro all of a sudden started hitting dingers, he would be great.
Do you think Stephen Kwan's hitting a lot of dingers?
No, he's got four, but he hits
Between,
doubles.
correct.
He
That's what he
walks.
does.
Does everything. Stephen Kwan is really good.
He's outstanding.
He is a much better player right now than Ichiro had ever been in his entire career.
He's having a much better season. That's not the same thing, actually, because again,
That's what
it's
I'm
only
saying.
been 2.5 months.
Right now, in these 2.5 months, this is better than Ichiro was at in his career. He's
He is
playing at a higher level.
only eighth in AL position player WAR. Oh no, that was 2022. I guess that's not this season. Wait, is he not in the top 10 in AL
2.7
position
WAR.
player? Is his defensive WAR that bad? I'm confused. I have questions.
It's okay. He's won the Gold Glove his first 2 years.
Yeah, he is not in the top 10. Somehow. And
Not in the top
Ichiro,
10 is where Ichiro belongs.
as we know in 2003, or was it 2004? It was 2004 the Ichiro year?
Oh, the good season.
Yes, that's right, because the team was terrible and the team was still good in 2001, as we know, led the AL in WAR. So,
You always come back to good season for Ichiro.
not good season. All-time great season.
Is there a place? Look at this. Like, people talk about a speed. 2002, 31 stolen bases, 15 caught stealing. That is a horrible ratio.
It was a different era. That you could throw over to first base like 8,000 times back
then. It doesn't
then.
Matter. Like, no wonder he stopped walking after that. He's like, I just get picked off anyway. What happened between his rookie year? I mean, it's only 27 to 28. He stole 56 bases as a rookie and 14 caught stealing. I mean, that was an exceptionally bad year. He has some kind of great ones after that.
Yeah.
I think Ichiro became a better base runner, but that's such a strange season that he had.
I don't know. Maybe he had some injuries or something.
We weren't watching.
It's true. It is all true. Well, he led baseball in intentional walks that year, or at least the AL. Does not speak well of the Mariners, whoever was hitting number two in the Mariners lineup.
Just like, they probably could have intentionally walked him every at bat from 2002 to 2010, and the Mariners would have won the same amount of games.
They would have won the same amount of playoff games.
They definitely would have won the same amount of playoff games.
Well, the would one bit of
interesting simulation.
The one bit of bad news from the Mariners organization this past week: get well soon to 2023 first round pick Johnny Formello, who suffered an ACL tear while playing for the Low A Modesto Nuts. So, not that we were seeing him necessarily, but he'll not be out there the rest of this season, unfortunately.
Dang, I've canceled my trip to Modesto.
All right, with that, it's time to get into the roundup. And we start with a live update on the Calder Cup Finals.
There we go.
Game 3 played earlier this evening at Acrisure Arena in Palm Desert, Coachella Valley, with a 6-2 win to take a 2-1 lead in the Calder Cup Finals over the hated Hershey Bears. You really should come up with a more candy-related name, I suppose. They took Game 1 in Hershey 4-3 before dropping Game 2 5-2. Under the 2-3-2 format, the Firebirds will have a chance to close out at home, hosting the next two games before the series returns to Hershey for Games 6 and 7, if necessary.
Did you listen to the Slapshot rewatchables?
No, I haven't seen that. I haven't listened to that yet.
There was a moment where they were talking about minor league hockey teams. They were like, we should have more fandom of minor league hockey teams like in small towns, which A, I agree with. And B, they were like, what are the teams like? What is the city around us? Like, what is the one? And I'm screaming about Coachella Valley to the podcast or whatever. And I'm like, that's the team. Because they're talking about in Southern California. Oh, yeah.
Who else? Anyone else?
Sean Fennessy and Simmons. Okay. It's like the classic lineup. Like the Pelton cast when we don't have a guest.
No, the Pelton cast when we have Katie. Famous cousin Nate, Katie.
Katie is the classic lineup.
Oh, you know, I forgot to shout out in toast, by the way. Congrats to third Pelton brother Mike Sean Dugar, who got married over the weekend. All right, Sounders, a feel-good win Saturday as they celebrated five decades of Sounders soccer in Seattle. With two homegrown players scoring, Jordan Morris opening scoring in the 28th minute, heading home a free kick from Albert Rushnak, and then Paul Rothrock, who replaced Alex Roldan after Alex was involved in a collision of heads in the opening seconds, and Christian slid back to right back to replace him, doubled it in the 57th minute with a finish at the back post. Minnesota did not have a shot on goal in this match, created just 0.3 XG to the Sounders 2.3. You were there.
I was there.
What was it like?
Like a soccer match.
Were there any special ceremonies?
All of the festivities. Oh, entirely. I came in late. Okay. Well, so I'm a smart person and I timed it. I looked at the schedule. I saw that there was a Mariners game and I was like, parking is going to be excellent in the greater south side of the stadiums that we like to park in. I was like, parking's going to be excellent.
Look, we're going to park in the south side anyway.
If I can wait out this Mariners traffic. So I've got to thread the needle here. I waited a little bit too long, but let me tell you, I didn't see any festivities, but I got amazing parking. There we go.
The Mariners made you sweat with that ninth inning on Saturday.
They really did. Cause I probably should have left and listened to the Mariners while I was going, but I ended up getting kind of engaged in the Mariners game. So I just watched till the end and then left when that was over.
It was nerve-wracking. I was driving and did not find out the final result until I got to my destination.
I like literally left my house right when the Mariners game ended, and I missed like 2 minutes of the Sounders match. So that's how good I threaded it perfectly.
If
That's
you
how
had
good the
missed, by the
parking
way,
was.
those 2 minutes of the Italy match earlier Saturday.
We're talking about that later, but
Okay.
we have to come back to the year after. But
Well,
Dr. Stephen
you would have missed a
Newby
key moment.
was back in the
That's
house.
true. When did Dr. Stephen Newby stop doing the anthem? I don't attend a lot of Sounders games these days, so I don't know the timing of that.
That was
It
a
was
question that I asked Chris, who I was with, third, fourth Talking Taco Time co-host. Just
just
Taco
talking
Time.
Taco Time. Yeah.
Talking Taco Time co-host.
We don't number it.
And he was like something like 2018. And to
Cool.
me, I'm for, we should have an anthem singer for every team.
You like the NHL tradition.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, one singer.
I do enjoy mixing it up a little bit, with all due respect to Dr.
Yeah,
Stephen Newby.
I like
Or
having the like pomp and circumstance of like you go to a place,
did the
you
Kraken
know
have a
what you're
specific
going to
anthem
get.
singer? They
I
must, right?
believe they do. But you go there, like imagine it on a national soccer, right? Or international soccer. Let's say that you go to Liverpool and they have an anthem singer. You're like, you want to go see that person singing the anthem. You want to get the entire experience of being in that place, right? It adds to the culture of the team having one person do it. It's like it's along the same lines of like college football. You've got your jump around, right? If you're at Wisconsin and you've got your anthem singer. It's the same thing every time. It's uniform. You have built culture. Having a new person through each time builds no culture. I understand it possibly for the community or whatever, but like having worked with people who've sung the national anthem, it's not really that fun of a thing to do.
The Kraken have two anthem singers who wrote primary anthem singers who rotate, and I've learned that one of them, Madison Stoneman, is a Burien native.
Oh, there we go. I'm just
So,
telling you,
big podcast for
Chris told
Burien.
me I wasn't there. When else do we talk about Burien? Maya Mendoza?
Yeah.
Valley View Elementary is not in Burien. Thank you.
Well, she would die of language, which isn't Burien.
This SeaTac, Washington. Anyway, Chris said he choked up a little bit
Oh,
with Dr.
that's
Stephen Newby.
very appropriate. Very
I
appropriate.
don't think that they only have two anthem singers, though. They do have other people who sing the anthem who are
I
not
yeah, I
Dr.
think they
Stephen
have
Newby.
two primary anthem singers, but they do rotate some other ones.
I want it all to be 100% culture, and I want Dr. Stephen Newby back as anthem singer.
Do we know if he still lives here? Like, it could have been a personal thing. It might not have been. Might not have been their choice necessarily.
SPU professor Stephen Newby.
Oh, okay. Well, if he's still teaching at SPU, then probably not. All right.
I don't
Fair
know if he's
enough.
still teaching at SPU.
All right. Well, upcoming for the Sounders, a
Wait, I
three-match
had
week. Oh, you had
more
more. Oh,
thoughts on
well.
this match. Hold on.
Okay.
Jeez. I got
Great.
enough soccer thoughts.
Great.
The goal so where's Rothrock from? What is the
I want to say like Shoreline, but let me double check.
UW?
No, he was he. I don't think he played college soccer at all. He was just in the Sounders Academy.
I'll let it slide then.
Oh, nope. That's no. He actually played for Notre Dame and Georgetown.
All right, fair. That's fine. As long as it wasn't, the team from down south, we're good. It's not fast enough down there. But the goal that they scored, that Rothrock scored, the second one, played a great match overall. It was probably the best goal that I've seen the Sounders score overall in like 2 to 3 years. How it was
Wow.
set up. It was one of those goals where you could see it being set up, and it literally happened right in front of us. But the way that they passed and got into space was just like they're really playing soccer now. Like they are actually doing the thing. And a lot of times, like you try to do certain things and set up scoring goals in soccer. Same with hockey, where you're like you go through all this process and then you actually score because the ball bounces some crazy way, right? That's like the most important thing that you can actually orchestrate to actually scoring goals is not the beautiful game. It's some random shit. And this was like they set it up beautiful game wise. And so I thought that was an incredible goal that happened right in front of us. Rothrock putting it in. And then Jobo, I've been to two consecutive matches that he scored in. So
Yeah, we need to get you on more often for Jordan Morris's scoring, although he's scored in some of the other games, including on the road as well. So he's in form, as they say now. It needs to remain
They looked
so.
very good. It was the best, again, that I've seen the Sounders play overall as a team in a very long time.
It was certainly one of their better wins this season. They avoided any red cards, which is great news. A three-match week sees the Sounders.
Minnesota had picked up a red card as well. It was late in the match, but.
Three-match week sees the Sounders travel to Houston on Wednesday to face the Dynamo. They're back home Saturday to host FC Dallas. They begin that stretch ninth in the West ahead of the Timbers via head-to-head tiebreaker. The Houston game particularly important as the Dynamo are 2 points up with a match in hand. Dallas enters the week 4 points back of the Sounders, albeit also with a match in hand. And Alex Rodan did not travel for the match, is in concussion protocol after that clash of heads, which that you missed in the opening stages of the Sounders
match.
Oh,
yeah. I actually heard about that too. I did not see that. You're right.
Are we going to talk about the Euro here?
Thanks for reminding me.
I didn't. You were the one who talked to me about the Euros starting. I figured you knew.
I did. I thought they're. I like got to the Sounders match. Chris and I are talking about the Euro, and I'm like, oh, let me see when Italy. What? At least they won.
Yeah, you should have been on the Discord.
Discord really... that there was Discord between you and me for not okay. telling me that it happened.
Well, I didn't. I knew I needed to inform you about Storm Games. I didn't know I needed to inform
the fact
you about
that you
Italy.
Didn't see me Such chatting a... to you about Italian soccer. You should have known that I didn't. I was probably at a children's baseball game. What time was that match? It was on Saturday.
I mean, if it's any time on a weekend, you were at a children's baseball match, but 12 p.m., 12 noon on Saturday.
They call them games in baseball, not matches.
Sorry, I'm in such
just to educate
soccer
you.
Brain right now.
Yeah. I know you don't care about the Mariners as your number one team like I do, but like it was noon.
Yes.
I could have streamed it at least. Well, at least Italy won. I literally watched 0 seconds. So,
they conceded in the first minute of the game.
Yeah, that was the fastest goal in Euro history.
Like, yes. Like
they haven't been playing it very long though, right?
No. My logic was, well, I love the pageantry of the anthem before international soccer matches. So I'm going to watch that. Then I'm going to go make my oatmeal for breakfast after the match kicks off, or at least after the anthems are concluded. And then I just hear this like pandemonium from the other room. And I'm like, what the fuck? But it was good because it unlocked the sleeping giant that was the Italy offense. Which
there
scored not one, but two goals to hit the over.
Oh, hello.
Lush to Jivers' dismay.
Not one, but two goals.
It wasn't just goal. It was goals.
Wow.
They started a striker who scored one career goal for the Italy national team.
Who was that?
That was interesting. Oh, that's asking a lot for me to remember who that player was.
Okay.
There's a lot of unfamiliar names on this team from, you know, much like the Mariners, I haven't been watching as much between the 2022 Euro or the 2020 Euro, I should say, and now. Scamacca is the starting striker, Gianluca Scamacca.
Okay.
But got a couple of impressive goals. Looked pretty dangerous. So they're in a brutal group. I don't know if you're aware of this.
I'm very aware of this.
That they're in a group with Spain and with Croatia. They beat Albania. We didn't say that, 2-1 in this opening match. That was obviously a must win. The good news is that Spain beat up on Croatia 3-0. So if Italy can just draw against Croatia and keep it close against Spain, they can finish second. And then also four of the third place teams do advance. Part of the reason this group is so strong is there's only six groups in the Euro instead of eight.
I mean, my basic thinking was like, everybody's probably going to lose to Spain. You don't want to lose badly to Spain, I suppose. If they could eke out a draw against Spain, they're in a very good position.
Which, do you know when this, I guess this is not tomorrow. This is
Thursday
at
12 p.m. So I have it in my calendar. I've blocked off for meetings. I am like, Tristan is out.
I'm going to be missing it. We're recording the mock off season, so I'll have to be following along.
Wow, a sacred event, the mock off season.
As we're recording the Dunked On mock off season.
Has he told people that that's coming, or is this like a pre-save?
I mean, people
response?
Are aware it's coming. I don't know if they know what day it's going to be.
When is it airing? Can you say? Do you know?
I mean, it'll probably be out that night.
What teams are you going to be? Can you say?
I can. I have to go reload that page, which I had left to... I wished it was for the Calder Cup playoffs, but it was something else.
But no, after the debacle on Saturday, I've marked my calendar for all these other matches.
All right, I have Atlanta, Brooklyn,
Boring,
Chicago,
boring,
Detroit,
boring, boring. What? Where did you get these teams? You got
Miami,
the least interesting Eastern Conference teams?
Milwaukee, Philadelphia,
Are you only doing
Phoenix,
Eastern Conference teams?
and
What the hell?
Toronto.
You have all East teams except for Phoenix?
And yes, I do have all of these teams except for Phoenix.
Did you draft these or were you assigned them?
Assigned, although I had to trade away the Clippers. They were my other
Why?
West team because too much self-bidding for the Paul George sweepstakes.
There's a Paul George sweepstakes?
Yeah, he's like the number one free agent on the market.
He's not going to re-sign with the Clippers? What is the expectation here?
I mean, I'm now running the Sixers and not the Clippers, so I hope not. He's been eligible for an extension for months. Kawhi Leonard signed the extension. Paul George didn't.
Interesting.
He was out there. He was on ESPN Countdown set on Friday night, hanging out with Joel Embiid.
Interesting.
So we'll see.
Don't you think James Harden would have been like, hey, dude, maybe not? Like the beef that James Harden has with the Sixers is very deep.
The beef that James Harden has with Daryl Morey is very deep. I don't
I
know
mean,
if
you're
his
still
beef extends
signing
to the
them.
ex entire organization, but also, like, Paul George is just his own, he's an adult. He can make up his own mind. He doesn't have to do what James Harden wants him
I'm
to
just saying, like, if there's somebody who is like talking shit about, who knows? I mean, I don't. How much do you think NBA players are talking about their situation on a previous team with other players?
I mean, I don't think it's like formally, but I'm sure it comes up.
Yeah. You think the top two teams in the Paul George sweepstakes are the Clippers and the Sixers?
Do I think that the best option for him in free agency is to sign with a team that has Joel Embiid and Tyrese Maxey and a shit ton of cap space? Yeah, I think that's the top option. I don't think it's the Detroit Pistons, with all due respect to the team that I
You've
have.
got the Pistons, so you're
I mean, no, the really wild scenario, obviously, would be Paul George attempted to go back to Oklahoma City. But
That's not gonna happen.
I don't see that one in the cards.
What about the Lakers? They just don't have the money for it.
I mean, actually, they could hypothetically swing a sign and trade because they could survive being hard capped, but I don't think the Clippers are going to facilitate that one.
They don't want to help out the Lakers.
They super interested in Rui Hachimura's contract? Probably not.
Eventually, I mean, if they could flip Paul George in the type of package that Oklahoma City got, there's just not a player like it's.
I mean,
I'm
you also
looking.
can't because besides the Kawhi factor, Paul George is 7 years older. I guess it's only 5 years older now.
I'm not. I'm just going to be so upset if Oklahoma City, like I've constantly cheered for the Clippers strictly out of spite for Oklahoma City. And that they ended up getting SGA as part of that deal. Like, that's the draft picks, who even cares, right? But getting SGA as part of this deal
I
is.
mean, one of the draft picks was Jalen Williams. I wouldn't go so far as to say who even cares, but
But
yes.
you would flip Jalen Williams. You'd be like, oh, they have Jalen Williams and we got Paul George for this time period. At no point, if you could go back in time and just have SGA, like the Clippers would just keep him. They would, I if it was Paul George or Jalen Williams, they probably would be like, yeah, we'll take Paul George. If you could redo it. Ugh, what a fucking travesty that whole trade was. Well, anyway, have fun with the Hawks and the Pistons. I don't know what your plans are for those teams. How can you do it before the draft, also? Like, do you just assume the players they're going to draft?
I mean, it's trickier, but free agency is beginning now. Players are allowed to negotiate with their old teams right now. Like they're not technically supposed to announce contracts, but a deal could be struck, between Paul George and the Clippers, for example, right now.
And it's not like whoever the Pistons or the Hawks sign or whatever is going to radically change how they're going to approach free agency.
Also, the Hawks don't have any money in free agency, so there's not a it's free agency. I don't know if it radically affects the trading of Trae Young or DeJounte Murray. So, all right, Seattle Reign FC snapped their four-game losing streak on Sunday, holding a Thorns team playing without Sophia Smith due to red card suspension, as well as U.S. Women's National teammate Sam Coffey and Olivia Moultrie to a scoreless draw at Lumen Field on CBS. It was the lowest expected goals for Portland all year. And this brutal schedule for the Reign starts to flip Sunday as they host eighth place Racing Louisville for their annual Pride match. Seattle Storm split their first two games of their current three-game road trip. Got a 92-84 win Thursday in Dallas with Skylar Diggins-Smith scoring 21 points to lead four players in double figures. Then, did you see any of this game Sunday while you
No.
were at youth baseball? Fell behind by as many as 21 points in Phoenix before rallying to get within six in the fourth quarter of an 87-78 loss. Definitely a bit of a make or miss element to that one. The Storm went 5 of 26 from three. Phoenix 7 of 18. Maybe the 18 more notable, given the number of threes they hoisted on Tuesday night as they were taking down the New York Liberty. I believe that may have been a record for combined three pointers between the two teams. A game you were watching earlier tonight.
I mean, Phoenix is good. They're legit good.
Yeah, so when the Storm played them earlier, Brittney Griner was still out of the lineup, hadn't played yet this season. They were also without Rebecca Allen. And we knew that Phoenix was like an extremely top-heavy team with limited depth. So without two starters, weirdly, they weren't very good. But since those players have come back, they're, I believe, now 4-1 with a narrow loss at Las Vegas as the only loss. They were 15 of 30 tonight from three. New York went 18 of 42 in a loss to the Mercury. So the Storm wrap up this three-game road trip Wednesday against the Aces in Las Vegas. Aces still scuffling along at 500, expecting to get point guard Chelsea Gray back soon. Gray was active for their last two games, including that win over Phoenix, but did not play, including Saturday's finals rematch, losing at home against New York. Pretty important opportunity here for the Storm to maintain some distance between them and the Aces in the standings, in what is currently the battle for the fourth and final home court advantage spot in the WNBA. And the Minnesota, Connecticut, and New York have kind of run away from the pack thus far. Those teams, Minnesota's two games ahead of the Storm, already holds the head-to-head tiebreaker, having swept the season, having won the first three games of the season series. Storm could open up three-game lead on Las Vegas. Obviously, a lot of season left to play, but that would be kind of intriguing, and then also clinch at least a tie in the season series if they win on Wednesday night against the Aces. After that one, the Storm won't leave Seattle again until their final game before the Olympic break, as they host a record 9-game homestand, the duration of June and the first half of July.
That sounds amazing.
It does, yeah.
Nine-game homestand? Why is it working out that way?
Well, I assume they had to save a lot of dates at Climate Pledge in case the Kraken made the finals.
Not joking, but that is hilarious.
I don't know. I don't know how legitimate that is. I mean, they had more home games scheduled earlier in the season last year. And sometimes it's just the way that the schedule making computer does it, but it is kind of funny.
I mean, it's gonna be actually deeply annoying when there's basketball back. Like I hate the idea that basketball is gonna be the second tenet of that NBA or WNBA basketball is gonna be the second tenet of a fucking hockey team, but like look, no offense to hockey. It's great. Just not Kraken hockey.
You're more of a Coachella Valley guy.
yeah. Fringe hockey teams. This is just that look, I'm anti-gatekeeping, but like when Coachella Valley comes to the mainstream, we will have been there. We'll have been there the whole time. But you
Much
know
like
what? We'll
Dan
welcome all
Bylsma,
of the new Coachella Valley fans.
you're not sure about the Kraken over Coachella
Look,
Valley.
Dan Bylsma has done it right. He's still coaching hockey too, right now. What are the Kraken
He's
doing? Absolutely nothing.
current for the draft and free agency. I don't know when the NHL draft is. I think it's after the NBA draft, but I don't know that for sure.
I'm
I
going to
should.
expect thorough scouting reports from you on it. Are you not doing
Oh.
the mock off season with Nate Duncan? No? Okay. Got Edmonton, Salt Lake,
I assume Edmonton doesn't have a lot of work to do. They've got to
Winnipeg.
be in pretty good shape. The NHL draft is June 28th through 29th, so it's
That's
the
coming
two
up
days
soon.
after the 2-day NBA draft.
There we go.
I guess we will be previewing it on next week's pod to the extent that we're going to preview the NFL draft. Not a lot on UW sports this week. There's some 2025 recruits, but again, it's premature to get into that at this point. So we jump ahead to the Seahawks, who, after the completion of their mini camp, made quietly an intriguing move where they restructured Draymond Jones's contract to create additional cap space. According to Overcap, the Cap, which broke this news, they turned $10 million in salary into a signing bonus while adding 2 void years, decreasing his cap hit by $7.4 million. But that means now, if the Seahawks decide to waive Jones next offseason, his cap hit will be $14 million rather than the previous $6.7 million.
I think they are not going to waive Draymond Jones next offseason.
I mean, they restructured Jamal Adams' contract and then they waived him. I don't know if they
It's
did it with 200 gigs.
a different amount of money, and also Dre Jones is not Jamal Adams.
I agree with that, but
Jamal
it did
Adams,
look
there's
like
a
a
little
pick.
part of it of they just didn't want him on the team anymore. They didn't want him in the locker room. They didn't
But
want him on the team.
the
He's
point
not,
isn't
Jamal Adams
that.
ain't going to be
The
coming
question
back.
is, that should have been foreseeable before the season, but they just only had so many contracts they could restructure, so they had to do it. And this is like what teams do. They keep pushing it out, and people will claim like the salary cap is fake, like the Saints never have to deal with it. But you do. Like inevitably you do. The money has to be accounted for somewhere.
It's not like college sports where the money's endless.
Exactly.
Literally. So what do you think this means? I guess would why did they do this?
Because they are still digging out from those contract restructurings last year and going all in on a season where they missed the fucking playoffs.
It is a little bit of like Pete Carroll ain't there to blame anymore. Like, it's going to be a very interesting season for John Schneider, and he better hope that this Mike McDonald thing works out well. But
The other thing about
the.
Dre Jones specifically is, I don't know if you're aware of this. I mean, Jones apparently spent some time working at outside linebacker. I think this was in OTAs rather than the mini camp, which is where he got a lot of time last season.
I'm
After,
going to disagree with you at this point you're making, but yes, go ahead.
but you drafted Byron Murphy the second at interior defensive line. Like it does make it,
And re-signed Leonard Williams.
he's not the need that he was when you signed him, when Leonard Williams and Byron Murphy were not on your roster.
I think John Schneider has a. It's really hard to tell. I mean, look, the reality was Pete Carroll's gone and they re-signed Leonard Williams. Like at some point, it's not just Pete Carroll who is saying to go in all in on that season. John Schneider had to be complicit in it. And I did you watch the
He
documentary?
knew.
Did you watch the documentary about the, or at least the clip, this was posted in Discord, of Sean McVay being upset about them not getting Byron Murphy?
I did not watch the clip, but I'm aware that it existed.
Phenomenal stuff. But the most interesting piece about it was just like, it's Les Snead as their GM, right?
Yes.
He's running the room. Like, Sean McVay is saying something, and it's like, Les Snead's basically like, fuck off, coach. You know what I mean? Like,
I
that was.
mean, I don't think he's like fuck off coach, but yes.
Sean McVay was like, I don't want to do something crazy unless it's like, it's not in our DNA. Basically, like, he's like, I've done this right and I've won us a Super Bowl. There was a little bit of like, I'm making the moves here. I get it. You want a football player, but like, this, I'm doing this. And I thought it was an interesting dynamic considering that Sean McVay is like ultimately probably the most important person in the Rams organization overall. There's those power dynamics are very fascinating power dynamics. And I think I'm curious how much Pete Carroll actually was influencing things, or John Schneider was doing things based upon his own perspectives. Pete Carroll would weigh in, and John Schneider was annoyed about Pete Carroll getting all the credit, positive or negative, that Pete Carroll was getting. Because again, Pete Carroll, like, outsized more than probably anybody in Seahawks history, getting the attention for what the Seahawks are doing on the field.
Pete Carroll also like had the power written into his contract. He had the title. he had the final say.
That and, he was above John Schneider?
Yeah.
You still have to, having the final say, you have to, it's not like,
I mean, I think
literally
the
they're coming
sides
in
have
and
said that he didn't use that very often, especially in the draft, because
you
that's
have to
not
be presented with two different options to quote unquote have the final say. Does that make sense?
You're always presented with two different options. It's not like Les Snead is like just sitting there by himself doing all this. Like, you've got scouts, you know, giving you opinions. You've got various people. It's not like Les Snead is the only one talking to any other team about trades. Like, you assign that to various teams to various people.
That many situations where it's like, we could do X or Y. And drafting a player is one of those situations. Like, if they're
the defining version
but
of those.
That's only if there are two players you're deciding between. Not, we're trying to go up and trade for a player. Like, that would have been completely a John Schneider situation, because Pete Carroll was not going to be getting on the phone and putting together a package for a different GM. That's what I'm saying.
But Pete Carroll might be directing John Schneider, hey, get on the phone with this person. And that's where what he could do, and Sean McVay, as powerful as he is, can't do. Like, and it's interesting. It's kind of fascinating because
they were trying, Jennifer. Like, it wasn't like they weren't trying.
Sure, but you don't understand what I'm saying is that, like, someone's got to be the boss. I'm sure you've encountered situations in your work life.
I understand that somebody has to be the boss, and I get that Pete Carroll was above John Schneider.
But it's also fascinating because, like, there were only two coaches, I think, with that kind of power in the NFL, right?
Who, Belichick?
Yeah, and they both now sport UW gear.
Dog's ass. We're gonna see how much Jed Fish loves that. there might come a moment where all of a sudden it's kind of annoying.
I don't having think to Bill Belichick is like doing the, you know, like what the player coaches kid the players' dads on your team are doing to you in your mini coaching stints and being like, hey, you gotta play my guy more or something, or feature my player.
They would never. They know who's in charge.
I think Bill Belichick and Pete Carroll know their place.
I understand, but just like when things go haywire, having the voice of Bill Belichick and the voice of Pete Carroll, probably not the best to have around. Who knows? Maybe they are. Anyway, I thought it was interesting. I also, but the point that I'm going to push back on, which is you can never have enough pass rushers. There's not a time where it's just like, well, we're good,
but
all set.
The question
and
is
happy.
Not. And you have enough pass rushers. The question is, can you invest too much
allocating resources
in pass rush?
Because I understand
it's
that.
Not college football, and the scholarships are not endless.
But it's not like that they've invested a shit ton of money on safeties. Like,
I agree with that.
They have it in the right place, or they're paying some like obscene amount of money to a backup quarterback. They're not doing something process-wise wrong.
And it doesn't also need to be the case that like Leonard Williams or Byron Murphy II have to play so well that like Draymond Jones is suddenly like unnecessary. It could be just be that Draymond Jones has a bad season and they want to waive him. Like, that just happens to guys at the stage of his career. That's why you structured his contract the way you did in the first place, so that you could get out of it. So by definition, you're decreasing your options, or at least making it harder to waive him.
They're still harkening back to a move. It all goes back to the Jamal Adams trade.
It probably does, yes.
I mean, you could probably pick a domino before then, but like that is the biggest domino for the Seahawks to this moment they're in, is that Jamal Adams trade and then the Russell Wilson trade.
You can point to that Jamal Adams trade as helping facilitate the Mariners as your number one team.
There we go. That's 10 games up, double-digit lead in the AL West. First place Seattle Mariners to you. Thank
there's
you.
There's no playbook for the Pelton cast to talk about the Mariners being dominant in
yeah,
the
we don't know. Unprecedented territory. Literally, this is the first time. I mean, they've led the AL West at various times in the Pelton cast era, but not many times. This is definitely their first ever 10-game lead in the AL West in the Pelton cast era.
This also might be the highest combined Mariners and Sounders playoff odds of all time. I'd have to look that up. But you'll recall that in 2018, when the Mariners were dominating the AL West, that's when the Sounders started so terribly, I'm pretty sure, right? Or do I have my seasons? Am I thinking of a different season?
There was a season that the Mariners were dominating the AL West.
We had a graph of the Fangraphs playoff odds. They were like 88% to win the AL West at one point, I believe.
Oof. It'll never happen to us now. There's so many wild cards. They're making the playoffs. It's not a long season at all.
They were at one point 46-25.
The Mariners?
Yes. The Mariners of Seattle?
And we still covered them the way we covered them. Like, we didn't talk about them at all, basically.
Ooh,
was that when
we did
hot
some
takes
hot takes.
Started? Wow.
I don't know if that's when hot takes started. That's a great question. I have no
They
idea.
missed the playoffs?
They were 53-31 at the end of June. On the final day of June, they were 53-31.
Holy shit. What happened?
I mean, they didn't do that poorly the rest of the way. They were 38-42. But you could win 89 games and just not make the playoffs then. You could win 89 games this year and cruise to first place in the AL West. But the important question is, how good were the Sounders at that point?
Third of the AL West, yikes. This team is also just kind of good. Like, you look at the players and you're like, yeah, these are good players. It's not like those teams in the early 2000s where you're like, who were, or like late 2000s where you're like, who were these guys? Starting Guillermo Heredia for 125 games. That's kind of how I know that I wasn't paying too much attention to this team.
Where is, they not have a game log here? Oh, I'm in 2008. I see. That's
wow.
My,
Felix
part of
could have
my
made
issue.
Started a playoff game. He was bad that year, but.
Oh, because it's just showing me the, I'm going to the USL Seattle Sounders. That's my issue here. Yeah.
The whole
That
pitching
will
is
do
kind
it.
of bad. Aside from the big maple.
Do it for the big maple. All right, 2018 Sounders. Yeah, as of July 1st, they were formation 4-2-3-1. They don't have a running record here, but there's a lot of L's at the start of the season. They started the year 0-3 and had 9 losses and 3 wins. So I don't know if 2018 for sure. I think it was the year that Ziggy Schmidt got fired that I ruled out their playoff chances on the 4th of July.
I remember that, yeah.
Yeah. And then they won MLS Cup, which was fun. But 2018, they did start really terribly and then had a 10-game winning streak in July through September, which is just wild.
All right. Well, we hope both teams can continue to be good.
I mean, if they both made the playoffs again, there would just be no precedent for this. So we're in uncharted water.
All right.
On that note,
thanks for listening.
Thanks.